Wonder. "James Cromarty," I murmured. "Suppose you tell me about him." Bowden picked up a pencil and tried to balance it on its sharp end. "Cromarty worked mainly in 19th century prose and poetry. He was an excellent officer, but excitable. He had little time for procedure. He vanished one evening when he said he had a tip-off about a rare manuscript. We found him a week later in the abandoned Raven Public House on Morgue Road. They had shot him 6 times in the face."
"I'm sorry to hear that."
"I've lost friends before," said Bowden, his voice never wavering from the measured pace of speech he used. "But he was a close friend and colleague, and I would gladly have taken his place." He rubbed his nose slightly. It was the only sign of outward emotion that he had shown. "I consider myself a spiritual man, Miss Next, although I am not religious. By spiritual I merely mean that I feel I have good in my soul and am inclined to follow the correct course of action given a prescribed set of circumstances. Do you understand?" I nodded. "Having said that, I would still be very keen to end the life of the person who did this foul deed. I have been practising on the range and now carry a pistol full-time. Look."
"Show me later, Mr. Cable. Do you have any leads?"
"None. Nothing at all. We don't know who he was seeing or why. I have contacts over at Homicide. They have nothing either."
Being shot 6 times in the face is the mark of a person with a gleeful passion for the undertaking of their duties, I told him. Even if Cromarty had been carrying a gun, I don't think it would have made much difference.
"You could be right," sighed Bowden. "I can't think of a single time that a pistol has been drawn on a Literatech investigation."
I agreed. 10 years ago in London it had been the same. But big business and the huge amounts of cash in the sale and distribution of literary works had attracted a bigger criminal element. I knew of at least 4 London Literatechs who had died in the line of duty. "It's becoming more violent out there. It's not like it is in the movies. Did you hear about the Surrealist riot in Chichester last night?"
"I certainly did," he replied. "I can see Swindon involved in similar disturbances before too long. The Art College nearly had a riot on its hands last year when the governors dismissed a lecturer who had been secretly encouraging students to embrace abstract expressionism. They wanted him charged under the interpretation of the Visual Medium Act. He fled to Russia, I think."
I looked at my watch. "I have to go and see the Spec Ops Commander."
Bowden allowed a rare smile to creep upon his serious features. "I bid you good luck. If you would permit me to offer you some advice, keep your automatic out of sight. Despite James' untimely death, Commander Hicks doesn't want to see the Literatechs permanently armed. He believes that our place is firmly at a desk." I thanked him, left my automatic in the desk drawer, and walked down the corridor. I knocked twice and was invited into the outer office by a young clerk. I told him my name, and he asked me to wait.
"Commander won't be long. Fancy a cup of coffee?"
"No, thanks." The clerk looked at me curiously.
"They say you've come from London to avenge Jim Cromarty's death. They say you killed 2 men. They say your father's face can stop a clock. Is this true?"
"It depends on how you look at it. Office rumours are pretty quick to get started, aren't they?"
Braxton Hicks opened the door to his office and beckoned me in. He was a tall, thin man with a large moustache and a grey complexion. He had bags under his eyes. It didn't look as though he slept much. The room was far more austere than any commander's office I had ever seen. Several golf bags were leaning against the wall, and I could see that a carpet putter had been hastily pushed to one side. He smiled genially and offered me a seat before sitting himself.
"Cigarette?"
"I don't, thank you."
"Neither do I."
He stared at me for a moment and drummed his long fingers on the immaculately clear desk. He opened a folder in front of him and read in silence for a moment. He was reading my SO5 file. Obviously he and Analogy didn't get on well enough to swap information between clearances.
"Operative Thursday next, eh?"
His eyes flicked across the pertinent points of my career.
"Quite a record. Police, Crimea, rejoined the police, then moved to London in 75. Why was that?"
"Advancement, sir." Braxton Hicks grunted and continued reading.
Spec ops for 8 years, twice commended. Recently loaned to SO5. Your stay with the latter has been heavily censored, yet it says here you were wounded in action.
He looked over his spectacles at me.
Did you return fire?
No.
Good.
I fired first.
Not so good.
Braxton stroked his moustache thoughtfully.
You were operative grade 1 in the London office, working on Shakespeare, no less. Very prestigious. Yet you swap that for a grade 3 operative assignment in a backwater like this. Why?
Times change, and we change with them, sir.
Braxton grunted and closed the file. Here at Spec Ops, my responsibility is not only with the literatechs, but also art theft, vampirism and lycanthropy, and the chronoguard, anti-terrorism, civil order and the dog pound. Do you play golf?
No, sir.
Shame. Shame. Where was I? Oh, yes. Out of all those departments, do you know which I fear most?
I've no idea, sir.
I'll tell you. None of them. The thing I fear most is Spec Ops regional budget meetings. Do you realise what that means next?
No, sir.
It means that every time one of you puts in for extra overtime or a special request, I go over budget and it makes my head hurt right here.
He pointed to his left temple.
And I don't like that. Do you understand?
Yes, sir. He picked up my file again and waved it at me.
I heard you had a spot of bother in the big city. Other operatives getting killed. It's a whole new, different, alternative kettle of fish here, you know. We crunch data for a living. Do you want to arrest someone, then have a uniform do it. No running about shooting up bad guys, no overtime, and definitely no 24-hour surveillance operations. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Now, about Hades.
My heart leapt. I had thought that would have been sensitive, anything.
I understand you think he is still alive.
I thought for a moment. My eyes flicked to the file Hicks was holding. He divined my thoughts.
Oh, that's not in here, my dear girl. I may be a Hick commander in the boonies, but I do have my sources. You think he's still alive?
I knew I could trust Victor and Bowden, but about Hicks I was not so sure. I didn't think I would risk it.
A symptom of stress, sir. Hades is dead.
He plonked my file in the out tray, leaned back in his chair, and stroked his moustache, something he obviously enjoyed.
So, you're not here to try and find him?
Why would Hades be in Swindon if he were alive, sir? Braxton looked uneasy for a moment.
Quite. Quite.
He smiled and stood up, indicating that the interview was at an end.
Good. Well, run along. One piece of advice. Learn to play golf. You'll find it very rewarding and relaxing game. This is a copy of the department's budget account, and this is a list of all the local golf courses. Study them well. Good luck.
I went out and closed the door after me. The clerk looked up.
Did he mention the budget?
I don't think he mentioned anything else. Do you have a waste bin? The clerk smiled and pushed it out with his foot. I dumped the heavy document in it unceremoniously.
Bravo,
he said. As I was about to open the door to leave, a short man in a blue suit came powering through without looking. He was reading a fax and knocked against me as he went straight through to Braxton's office without a word. The clerk was watching me for my reaction.
Well, well, I murmured. Jack shit.
You know him?
Not socially.
As much charm as an open grave,
said the clerk, who had obviously warmed to me since I'd been the budget.
Steer clear of him. Goliath, you know.
I looked at the closed door to Braxton's office.
What's he here for?
The secretary shrugged, gave me a conspiratorial wink, and said very pointedly and slowly,
I'll get that coffee you wanted, and it was 2 sugars, wasn't it?
No thanks, not for me.
No, no, he replied.
2 sugars. 2 sugars?
He was pointing at the intercom on his desk.
Heavens above, he exploded. Do I have to spell it out?
The penny dropped. The clerk gave a wan smile and scurried out of the door. I quickly sat down, flipped up the lever marked 2 on the intercom, and leaned closer to listen.
I don't like it when you don't knock, Mr. Shit.
I'm devastated, Braxton. Does she know anything about Hades?
She says not. she's lying. She's here for a purpose. If I find Hades first, we can get rid of her.
Less of the we, Jack, said Braxton testily. Please remember that I have given Goliath my full cooperation, but you are working under my jurisdiction and have only the powers that I bestow upon you. Powers that I can revoke at any time. We do this my way or not at all. Do you understand?
Shit was unperturbed. He replied in a condescending manner.
Of course, Braxton. As long as you understand that if this thing blows up in your face, the Goliath Corporation will hold you personally responsible.
I sat down at my empty desk again. There seemed to be a lot going on in the office that I wasn't a part of. Bowden laid his hand on my shoulder and made me jump.
I'm sorry, I didn't wish to startle you. Did you get the Commander's budget speech?
And more. Jack Shit went into his office as though he owned the place. Bowden shrugged.
Since he's Goliath, then the chances are he does.
Bowden picked his jacket up from the back of his chair and folded it neatly across his arm.
Where are we going? I asked. Lunch, then a lead in the Chuzzlewit theft. I'll explain on the way. Do you have a car?
Bowden wasn't too impressed when he saw the multicoloured Porsche.
This is hardly what one might refer to as low profile.
On the contrary, I replied. Who would have thought a Literatech would drive a car like this? Besides, I have to drive it. He got in the passenger seat and looked around slightly disdainfully at the Spartan interior.
Is there a problem, Miss Next? You're staring.
Now that Bowden was in the passenger seat, I had suddenly realised where I had seen him before. He had been the passenger when the car had appeared in front of me at the hospital. Events had indeed started to fall into place. Chapter 14. Lunch with Bowden. Bowden Cable is the sort of honest and dependable operative that is the backbone of Spec Ops. They never win commendations or medals, and the public has no knowledge of them at all. They are all worth 10 of people like me. Thursday next, a life in Spec Ops. Bowden guided me to a transport cafe on the old Oxford Road. I thought it was an odd choice for lunch. The seats were hard orange plastic, and the yellow melamine-covered tabletops had started to lift at the edges. The windows were almost opaque with dirt, and the nylon net curtains hung heavily with deposits of grease. Several flypapers dangled from the ceiling, their potency long worn off, the flies stuck to them long since desiccated to dust. Somebody had made an effort to make the interior slightly more cheery by sticking up a few pictures hastily cut from old calendars. A signed photo of the 1978 England soccer team was hung above a fireplace that had been filled in and then decorated with a vase full of plastic flowers.
"Are you sure?"
I asked, sitting gingerly at a table near the window.
"The food's good," responded Bowden, as though that was all that mattered.
A gum-chewing waitress came up to the table and put some bent cutlery in front of us. She was about 50 and was wearing a uniform that might have been her mother's.
"Hello, Mr. Cable," she said in a flat tone, with only a sliver of interest in her voice. "All well?"
"Very well, thank you, Lottie. I'd like you to meet my new partner Thursday next."
Lottie looked at me oddly.
"Any relation to Captain Next?"
"He was my brother," I said loudly, as if wanting Lottie to know that I wasn't ashamed of the connection. "And he didn't do what they said he did." The waitress stared at me for a moment, as if wanting to say something, but not daring.
"What will you lot have, then?"
she asked instead, with forced cheerfulness. She had lost someone in the charge, I could sense it.
"What's the special?" asked Bowden. "Soup d'auberge au fromage," replied Lottie, "followed by Roque's Camino."
"What's that?" I asked.
"It's braised pork with cumin, coriander and lemon," replied Bowden.
"Sounds great."
"Two specials, please, and a carafe of mineral water."